Thank you very much for coming in. Next up is Marysville Taping versus Labor and Industries.
May it please the court, I'm David Mott on behalf of Marysville Taping Company, the appellant. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. This comes before the court on the application of the householder exemption set forth in revised code 19.28261 paren 6.
Who's the householder?
Okay. The householder was Mr. Gilbertson.
Or Gilbertson Construction.
The findings of fact, however, she indicates clearly that he was both a contractor and a homeowner.
Finding 4 says that the residential property was owned by Gilbertson Construction.
I noted that. But I think, Your Honor, that's inconsistent with what she says in other areas, in other parts. I think in one of the conclusions, she refers to him being the owner of the property. Conclusion number 8. Third line from the bottom. And I would submit, Your Honor, further, that the state didn't meet its burden with reference to that because it didn't introduce a deed, it didn't have him testify as to the ownership, and when you take in context the testimony of Mr. Moen that Mr. Gilbertson said to him, I'm building a house over in Leavenworth, and I'd like to have you take your crew over there and do the taping. The evidence indicates that they had had prior relationships here in Snohomish County. Both of them are residents of Snohomish County. And they'd had prior working relationships. And so the inference, which I think the administrative law judge took, was based on his testimony, Mr. Moen's testimony, he went over there to take care of a friend's house on a one-time deal, but most of his work was here in Snohomish County.
Well, but it was for pay, right? It wasn't for free. It wasn't a friend.
Yeah,
but not a friend that way.
But in connection with that, Your Honor, the work that he went over to do was the chute work.
Right.
He specifically, the evidence is clear that Mr. Gilbertson was to furnish the heat. So as a matter of contract, the appellate never agreed to furnish the heat and by inference do the electrical installation. In fact, Mr. Moen testified that in his experience, the homeowners or the contractors always hired an electrician to do this kind of work.
Is it your position that it's the state's burden to show that you do not meet the requirements of the exception, or is it your burden to show that you fall within the exception?
It certainly would have been our burden to show that we were entitled to the householder exemption, I agree. But it's the state's burden to show that the appellant violated the statute as in terms of the connection. By the way, we do agree that since this is an issue regarding conclusions of law, as you know, the state challenged conclusions 5, 8, and 9, and therefore we think the de novo standard applies in this case.
Do we know from the record what the form of the entity Gilbertson Construction was? Do we know if that's a corporation?
If my memory is accurate, I think there's testimony in the record that Mr. Mulch checked the records to determine what the entity was, Marysville. And I think from that checking of the records, he determined that it was a corporation.
Marysville or Gilbertson Construction?
Oh, no, I'm talking about Marysville.
No, Gilbertson Construction is what
I'm saying. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know where that came from. There's nothing in the record that says that was corroborated.
One other point. Even if the exception, the householder exemption applies, it does not shield someone from the 010 citation, right? It doesn't shield you from hooking up the wires in a hazardous way. Doesn't matter who you are, if you're the householder or anybody else, if you don't comply with the code and it's hazardous, that's the basis for a citation.
Well, I would take issue with that. I would say that the exception says that any householder, and by the way, I cited the statute that the legislature has used for the definition of a householder. It says any person, any abode or home, whether it's owned by an owner or a lessee, it's a pretty broad definition. So I think that, and by the way, the exception says whether you assist or give assistance with reference to the connection of an electrical installation, provided, of course, that the person doesn't hold themselves out as being, you know, a certified electrician. So I believe that it does apply.
Doesn't it recite, though, that it excludes liability from sections 271 and above? It doesn't say 010, right?
Right. So, factually, I think it's significant that the state didn't cite either Mr. Gilbertson or Mr. Mueller. And the reason why I think that's significant is because Mr. Mulch testified about the householder exemption. He was well aware of it. And so I think the reason he didn't cite either one of them individually is because he knew that the householder exemption applied. And interestingly, the administrative law judge says in conclusion number 9, here the department has not demonstrated that the appellant's action subject him to RCW 19.2.8. At first I thought that was an error, but in thinking about it, I think I understand what she's talking about here. She's saying that if he's entitled to the exemption, then the appellant is also entitled to the exemption, but it's imputed to the company. And that ties in with the fact that the company could not have authorized him to do that installation. It wasn't certified. And a corporation is a creature of statute. It can't authorize its employees to do an illegal act. And by contract, it's clear that when Mr. Gilbertson when Mr. Mullen called Mr. Gilbertson and said words to the effect, well, what about the heat? Mr. Gilbertson didn't. Oh, I see my time's running.
Yeah.
Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Steve Vineyard. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Department of Labor and Industries. The Electrical Board properly concluded that Marysville Taping violated the electrical law, and this Court should affirm. First, Marysville Taping is not exempt under RCW 1928-2616, which contains a householder exemption, because it fails to meet three of the elements required by that statute. The general contractor was not a householder. Mr. Moan was not a friend, neighbor, relative, or similar person.
Other person.
Yes. And I guess what I'm arguing is that where a statute has specifically defined terms friend, neighbor, relative, and then a general undefined term, the general inference is that the undefined term applies only to people that are similar to the enumerated items. So that's why I argue that Mr. Moen would have to show that he's analogous to a friend, neighbor, or relative, or within that general zone, and that it's not reasonable to conclude that he is.
Do you have to have an ambiguity before you turn to that rule of construction?
I think ambiguity can be found either in the exact words of the statute or as applied to a situation. And I think in any event, statutes are not construed in ways that would render a lot of their language meaningless. And if other person means any other person of any kind whatsoever, then the statute's reference to friend, neighbor, and relative is completely superfluous. It means nothing. And I think a court, even in a statute that on its face may not look ambiguous, will not construe a statute in ways that make significant portions of its language meaningless.
What about if we assume for purposes of argument that the construction site was owned by the general contractor, how does that affect your argument?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. I'd say first, although there's some tension between the findings of both the electrical board and the administrative law judge, in finding of fact number 4, I think that was a finding that was really squarely focused on the issue of who owns this property. And that finding was that it was owned by the general contracting firm, not by the general contractor personally. In finding of fact, I believe it's number 8, that there's a reference to the department's investigator contacting Mr. Moen, and it sort of mentions in passing contacting Mr. Gilbertson, and it mentions in passing that he was the general contractor and owner of the property. But I don't think that finding can be reasonably construed as saying that Mr. Gilbertson owned it personally rather than owning it through his company, his general contracting company. So when the findings are read together, I think that's the inference.
And is there, this is following up on a question Judge Ferrellin asked, is there any evidence in the record that that's a solely owned business?
I don't believe there's any evidence about what business type or what business form Gilbertson Construction has. I also don't believe there's any evidence in the record at all that Marysville Taping is a corporation. That was an assertion I saw in the reply brief. I didn't see anything in the record that supports that inference. And what the electrical board found was that Marysville Taping is owned by Mr. Moen, and that would be loose language at a minimum if the electrical board thought that it was a corporation. Because a corporation, you know, someone might own a majority interest, but it wouldn't have an owner in that sort of straightforward fashion. So I think the findings at least imply that it's not a corporation. And in any event, they certainly didn't find that it was a corporation, and I see no evidence that it was a corporation.
If Mr. Moen testified, hey, this guy I've worked with in the past comes to me, asks me to come over east side of the mountains, do him a favor, he's building a house for himself and wanted me to do him a favor doing the drywall, so I drove over there, does that tend to move us away from just any subcontractor being asked to do electrical to, hey, here's a kind of a friendly relationship that's involved?
Right. I think that would be a closer question, and I think that's not the facts we have in this case. I mean, there's a reference to them having worked before. There's certainly no testimony in the record that he was doing it as a favor. I don't believe there's even any testimony that they were friends, let alone that he was doing it out of friendship rather than doing it as part of an overall work assignment. And I think an important note here is that although the record indicates that Mr. Moen wasn't, or Marysville Taping wasn't paid specifically to hook up the space heater with electrical wiring, that there was a nexus between the work that they were doing and that electrical installation, because the work Mr. Moen was doing was sheetrock or drywalling, and the evidence was that the space heater's purpose was to cure the drywall material. So certainly there was a connection between Marysville Taping's function in doing sheetrock work and the electrical installation work. It wasn't purely just a, hey, while I've got you here, would you mind doing me a favor? That was not what the evidence is in this case. I think even if there was evidence that a general contractor and a subcontractor had a tight personal relationship, and that the subcontractor considered the general contractor a friend, I still think the general contractor would not qualify as the householder, because this is property that's being constructed. The householder doesn't live there. I think the term householder implies more than mere property ownership. I think it implies that someone's living in that house as their property. And the dictionary definitions that I cited in my brief reinforce that sort of common sense inference.
Is there evidence in the record that Mr. Gilbertson was building the house for himself?
I don't think there's any clear evidence. The only thing that I can think of that in any way relates to that issue in the record is there's a reference to the general contractor building a house for himself. But I don't think it can be inferred from that he planned on living in the property as his home. There's certainly no testimony that he planned on living in that property. In any event, he certainly wasn't living on it at the time that the electrical work was being performed. So I don't think he qualifies as a householder. I also think it's noteworthy that in the same statute that contains the householder exemption, there's an exemption in subsection 1 that refers broadly to an owner of property, including a residence. But subsection 1, unlike subsection 6, only covers the owner, him or herself, and doesn't extend to people providing assistance. So I think when you read the two statute subsections together, the reasonable inference is that the legislature understood owner of property to be broader than householder. And householder, it intended to apply only to people that have actually made this their home, and not just a general contractor who happens to own a lot of property but is developing it.
So your interpretation is that this exemption is extraordinarily narrow and only applies if there is an individual who is actually living in the house.
Yeah, I think you know, with any area you could have a close question where someone hasn't moved in yet, but they're going to move in a week. But I think the statute was intended to be narrow and was intended to cover people who've either made it their home or at a minimum are going to occupy it in the near future, and not a home that's being developed with no evidence that there's any intention of the owner to ever live there. I think that would be an extremely broad interpretation of the statutory language. Yes. And at odds with the overall purpose of the electrical law, which is to protect the public from electrical work performed by unqualified people who aren't properly registered with the department and who perform the work improperly. There's sort of clear reasons why the legislature would carve out an exception for a homeowner who's receiving help with some sort of electrical work from a friend or neighbor or relative or similar type of person. There's no clear reason why the legislature would carve out an exception for a general contractor who's developing a house presumptively for commercial purposes and is using unlicensed subcontractors to perform electrical work. So that would be an extraordinarily odd interpretation of the statutory language and a result that seems plainly at odds with the overall purpose of the electrical laws.
What's the significance of the finding that was incorporated later on that he didn't hold himself out as doing electrical work?
Well, I'd say that's part of what the exemption requires, but it's not enough by itself. The statute says you have to be under the terms of statute, you must be a householder, you must be providing assistance, must be friend, neighbor, relative, or other person, which I argue must be analogous, and none of the individuals helps out as engaged in the electrical trade. So they can meet one of the four things that the statute requires, but not all of them. And therefore, the statute does not apply, and the department requests that this court affirm. Thank you.
Okay. I don't think it's material whether or not, in this case, Marysville Taping Company was a corporation or not. Certainly, Mr. Moen was the owner, whether he was a stockholder or a sole proprietorship, he was an owner. And I think that the administrative law judge clearly imputed his action to the entity, whether it was his company or whether it was a corporation. It's analogous to a case I tried years ago where an employee had been charged with assaulting a third person, and we raised the defense of affirmative defense. Once we proved affirmative defense, that affirmative defense was imputed to the company. And I think that's the case here. And I think you can find that meaning in the way that she drafted conclusion number 9, that the appellant's actions subject him. Appellant is Marysville Taping, and him is Mr. Mowing. So she had to conclude that since he was exempted, the company was exempted, and that's why she found that the state didn't meet its burdens as with reference to his action. Now, I interpret the household exemption a little bit differently from the state. I conclude that as long as there's any person who is either assisting or receiving assistance in the household connection, as long as they don't hold themselves out as engaged in the trade or business of electrical installations, that's the qualifier. And the evidence is undisputed that Marysville Taping Company, the appellate, never held itself out as having any of those kind of qualifications. Nor, and Mr. Mowen says, I didn't know what to do. Mr. Gilbertson dropped the wiring off at the place. He called them, and he didn't know what to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Next is.